the 6th of July. Up into the office, where some of us sat busy all the morning. At noon, home to dinner, Wither Creed came to dine with us, and brings the first word I hear of the news of a peace, the king having letters come to him this noon, signifying that it is concluded on, and that Mr. Coventry is upon his way, coming over for the king's ratification. The news was so good and sudden that I went with great joy to William Batten, and then to William Penn to tell it them. And so, home to dinner, mighty merry, and light at my heart only on this ground, that a continuing of the war must undo us. And so, though peace may do the like, if we do not make good use of it to reform ourselves and get up money, yet there is an opportunity for us to save ourselves. At least, for my own particular, we shall continue well till I can get my money into my hands, and then I will shift for myself. After dinner away, leaving Creed there by coach to Westminster, where to the Swan and drank, and then to the hall, and there talked a little, with great joy of the peace, and then to Mistress Martin's, where I met with the good news que esta no es con child, she having the estos upon her, the fear of which she did give me the other day, had troubled me much. My joy in this made me send for wine, and thither came her sister and Mistress Crag, and I stayed a good while there. But here happened the best instance of a woman's falseness in the world, that her sister Doll, who went for a bottle of wine, did come home all blubbering and swearing against one Captain Van Dana, a Dutchman of the Rhenish winehouse, that pulled her into a stable by the Dog Tavern, and there did tumble her and toss her, calling him all the rogues and toads in the world, when she knows that Ella hath suffered me to do anything with her 100 times. Thence, with joyful heart, to Whitehall, to ask Mr. Williamson the news, who told me that Mr. Coventry is coming over with a project of a peace, which, if the states agree to, and our king, when their ministers on both sides have showed it them, we shall agree, and that is all. But the king, I hear, doth give it out plain that the peace is concluded. Thence by coach home, and there wrote a few letters, and then to consult with my wife about going to Epsom tomorrow, sometimes designing to go, and then again not. And at last it grew late, and I bethought myself of business to employ me at home tomorrow, and so I did not go. This afternoon I met with Mr. Rolt, who tells me that he is going cornet under Colonel Ingoldsby, being his old acquaintance, and Ingoldsby hath a troop now from under the king, and I think it is a handsome way for him. But it was an ominous thing, methought, just as he was bidding me his last adieu. His nose fell a-bleeding, which run in my mind a pretty while after. This afternoon Sir Alex Fraser, who was of counsel for Sir John Minnis, and had given him over for a dead man, said to me at Whitehall, "What," says he, "Sir John Minnis is dead." I told him no, but that there is hopes of his life. Methought he looked very sillily after it, and went his way. Late home to supper, a little troubled at my not going to Epsom tomorrow as I'd resolved, especially having the Duke of York and William Coventry out of town. But it was my own fault, and at last my judgment, to stay, and so after supper to bed. This day, with great satisfaction, I hear that my Lady Jemima is brought to bed at Hinchingbrook, of a boy. The 7th of July, Lord's Day. Up and to my chamber, there to settle some papers, and thither comes Mr. Moore to me, and talk till church-time of the news of the times about the peace, and the bad consequences of it if it not be improved to good purpose, of fitting ourselves for another war. He tells me he hears that the discontented Parliament men are fearful that the next sitting the king will put for a general excise, by which to raise him money, and then to fling off the Parliament and raise a land army and keep them all down like slaves. And it is gotten among them that Bab May, the Privy Purse, hath been heard to say that £300 a year is enough for any country gentleman, which makes them mad, and they do talk of £600,000 or £800,000 gone into the Privy Purse this war, when in King James's time it arose but to £5,000, and in King Charles's but £10,000 in a year. He tells me that a goldsmith in town told him that, being with some plate with my Lady Castlemaine lately, she directed her woman, the great beauty, "Wilson," says she, Make a note for this and for that to the privy purse for money. He tells me a little more of the baseness of the courses taken at court in the case of Mr. Moyer, who is at liberty and is to give £500 for his liberty. But now the great ones are divided who shall have the money, the Duke of Albemarle on one hand, and another lord on the other, and that it is fain to be decided by having the person's name put into the king's warrant for his liberty, at whose intercession the king shall own that he is set at liberty, which is a most lamentable thing, that we do professedly own that we do these things, not for right and justice sake, but only to gratify this or that person about the king. God forgive us all. Busy till noon, and then home to dinner, and Mr. Moore come and dined with us, and much more discourse at and after dinner of the same kind. And then he gone, I to my office, busy till the evening, and then with my wife and Jane over to Halfway House, a very good walk, and there drank, and in the cool of the evening back again, and sang with pleasure upon the water, and were mightily pleased in hearing a boat full of Spaniards sing. And so home to supper and to bed. Jane of late mighty fine, by reason of a laced whisk her mistress hath given her, which makes her a very graceful servant. But above all, my wife and I were the most surprised in the beauty of a plain girl, which we met in the little lane going from Redriff Stairs into the fields, one of the prettiest faces that we think we ever saw in our lives. The 8th of July. Up into my chamber, and by comes greeting, and to my flageolet with him with a pretty deal of pleasure, and then to the office where William Batten, William Penn, and I met about putting men to work for the weighing of the ships in the river sunk. Then home again, and there heard Mr. Caesar play some very good things on the lute, together with myself on the viol, and greeting on the violin. Then with my wife abroad by coach, she to her tailor's, I to Westminster to Burgess, about my Tangier business, and thence to Whitehall, where I spoke with Sir John Nicholas, who tells me that Mr. Coventry is come from Breda as was expected, but contrary to expectation, brings with him two or three articles which do not please the king, as to retrench the act of navigation, and then to ascertain what are contraband goods. And then, that those exiled persons who are or shall take refuge in their country may be secure from any further prosecution. Whether these will be enough to break the peace upon or no, he cannot tell, but I perceive the certainty of peace is blown over. So called on my wife, and met Creed by the way, and they two and I to Charing Cross, there to see the great boy and girl that are lately come out of Ireland, the latter 8, the former but 4 years old, of most prodigious bigness for their age. I try to weigh them in my arms, and find them twice as heavy as people almost twice their age, and yet I'm apt to believe they are very young, their father a little sorry fellow, and their mother an old Irish woman. They've had 4 children of this bigness, and 4 of ordinary growth, whereof 2 of each are dead. If, as my Lord Ormond certifies, it be true that they are no older, it is very monstrous. So home and to dinner with my wife, and to pipe, and then I to the office, where busy all the afternoon till the evening, and then with my wife by coach abroad to Bow and Stratford, it being so dusty weather that there was little pleasure in it, and so home and to walk in the garden, and thither comes Pelling to us to talk, and so in and to supper, and then to bed, all the world being, as I hear, very much damped that their hopes of peace is become uncertain again. The 9th of July. Up pretty betimes into the office, we're busy till office time, and then we sat, but nothing to do but receive clamours about money. This day my Lord Anglesey, our new treasurer, came the first time to the board, and there sat with us till noon. And I do perceive he is a very notable man, and understanding, and will do things regular and understand them himself, not trust Fenn as Sir George Carteret did, and will solicit soundly for money, which I do fear was Sir George Carteret's fault, that he did not do that enough, considering the age we live in, that nothing will do but by solicitation, though never so good for the king or kingdom. And a bad business well solicited shall for peace sake speed, when a good one shall not. But I do confess I do think it a very bold act of him to take upon him the place of Treasurer of the Navy at this time. But when I consider that a regular accountant never ought to fear anything, nor have reason, I then do cease to wonder. At noon, home to dinner and to play on the flageolet with my wife, and then to the office where very busy, close at my office till late at night. At night, walked and sang with my wife in the garden, and so home to supper and to bed. This evening news comes for certain that the Dutch are with their fleet before Dover, and that it is expected they will attempt something there. The business of the peace is quite dashed again, so as now it is doubtful whether the king will condescend to what the Dutch demand, it being so near the Parliament, it being a thing that will, it may be, recommend him to them when they shall find that the not having of a peace lies on his side, by denying some of their demands. This morning, Captain Clark, Robin Clark, was at the table, now commands the Monmouth, and did when the enemy passed the chain at Chatham the other day, who said publicly at the table that he did admire at the order when it was brought him for sinking of the Monmouth, to the endangering of the ship and spoiling of all her provisions, when her number of men were upon her, that he could have carried her up the river whither he pleased, and have been a guard to the rest, and could have sunk her at any time. He did carry some 100 barrels of powder out of the ship to save it, after the order came for the sinking her. He knew no reason at all, he declares, that could lead them to order the sinking her, nor the rest of the great ships that were sunk, but above all admires they would burn them on shore and sink them there, when it had been better to have sunk them long way in the middle of the river, for then they could not have burnt them so low as now they did. The 10th of July. Up and to the office betimes, and there all the morning very busy, causing papers to be entered and sorted, to put the office in order against the Parliament. At noon, home to dinner, and then to the office again, close all the afternoon, upon the same occasion, with great pleasure, till late. And then with my wife and Mercer in the garden, and sung. And then home and sung, and to supper with great content, and so to bed. The Duke of York is come back last night from Harwich, but what news he brings I know not, nor hear anything today from Dover whether the enemy have made any attempt there, as was expected. This day our girl, Mary, whom Payne helped us to be under his daughter, when she came to be our cookmaid, did go away, declaring that she must be where she might earn something one day, and spend it and play away the next. But a good civil wench, and one neither wife nor I did ever give angry word to. But she hath this silly vanity that she must play. The 11th of July. Up betimes and to my office, and there busy till the office, which was only Sir Thomas Harvey and myself, met, and did little business, and then broke up. He tells me that the council last night did sit close, to determine of the king's answer about the peace, and that though he doth not certainly know, yet by all discourse yesterday he doth believe it is peace, and that the king had said it should be peace, and had bidden Alderman Backwell to declare upon the change. It is high time for us to have peace, that the king and council may get up their credits, and have time to do it. For that indeed is the bottom of all our misery, that nobody hath any so good opinion of the king and his council and their advice, as to lend money, or venture their persons or estates or pains upon people that they know cannot thrive with all that we can do, but either by their corruption or negligence must be undone. This, indeed, is the very bottom of every man's thought, and the certain ground that we must be ruined, unless the king changes course, or the Parliament come and alter it. At noon, dined alone with my wife. All the afternoon, close at the office, very hard at gathering papers and putting things in order against the Parliament. And at night, home with my wife to supper, and then to bed, in hopes to have all things in my office in good condition, in a little time, for anybody to examine, which, I am sure, none else will. The 12th of July. Up betimes and to my chamber, there doing business, and by and by comes greeting, and begun a new month with him, and now to learn to set anything, from the notes, upon the flageolet. But, Lord, to see how like a fool he goes about to give me direction would make a man mad. I out and by coach to Whitehall and to the Treasury Chamber, where did a little business, and thence to the Exchequer to Burgess about Tangier business, and so back again, stepping into the hall a little, and then homeward by coach, and met at Whitehall with Sir Hugh Cholmondeley, and so into his coach, and he with me to the excise office, there to do a little business also. In the way, he telling me that undoubtedly the peace is concluded, for he did stand yesterday where he did hear part of the discourse at the council table, and there did hear the king argue for it, among other things, that the spirits of the seamen were down, and the forces of our enemies are grown too great and many for us, and he would not have his subjects overpressed, for he knew an Englishman would do as much as any man upon hopeful terms. But where he sees he is overpressed, he despairs as soon as any other, and besides that, they have already such a load of dejection already upon them, that they will not be in a temper a good while again. He heard my Lord Chancellor say to the king, "Sir," says he, "the whole world doth complain publicly of treachery, that things have been managed falsely by some of his great ministers." "Sir," says he, "I am for your Majesty's falling into a speedy inquiry into the truth of it, and where you meet with it, punish it. But at the same time consider what you have to do, and make use of your time for having a peace. For more money will not be given without much trouble. Nor is it, I fear, to be had of the people, nor will a little do it, to put us into condition of doing our business." But the other day, Sir Hugh Cholmondeley tells me, he did say the other day at his table, "Treachery?" says he. "I could wish we would prove that there was anything of that in it, for that would imply some wit and thoughtfulness. But we are ruined merely by folly and neglect." And so Sir Hugh Cholmondeley tells me they did all argue for peace, and so he doth believe that the king hath agreed to the 3 points Mr. Coventry brought over, which I have mentioned before, and is gone with them back. He tells me further that the Duke of Buckingham was before the council the other day, and there did carry it very submissively and pleasingly to the king, but to my Lord Arlington, who doth prosecute the business, he was most bitter and sharp, and very slighting. As to the letter about his employing a man to cast the king's nativity, says he to the king, "Sir," says he, "this is none of my hand, and I refer it to your Majesty whether you do not know this hand." The king answered that it was indeed none of his, and that he knew whose it was, but could not recall it presently. "Why," says he, "it is my sister of Richmond's, some frolic or other of hers, of some certain person, and there is nothing of the king's name in it, but it is only said to be his by supposition, as is said." The king, it seemed not very displeased with what the Duke had said, but, however, he is still in the tower, and no discourse of his being out in haste, though my Lady Castlemaine hath so far solicited for him that the king and she are quite fallen out. He comes not to her, nor hath for some 3 or 4 days, and parted with very foul words, the king calling her a whore and a jade that meddled with things she had nothing to do withal, and she calling him fool, and told him, if he was not a fool, he would not suffer his businesses to be carried by fellows that did not understand them, and cause his best subjects, and those best able to serve him, to be imprisoned, meaning the Duke of Buckingham. And it seems she was not only for his liberty, but to be restored to all his places, which it is thought he will never be. While we were at the excise office talking with Mr. Ball, it was computed that the Parliament had given the king, for this war only, besides all prizes and besides the £200,000 which he was to spend of his own revenue to guard the sea, above 5 millions and odd hundred thousands, which is a most prodigious sum. Sir Hugh Cholmondeley, as a true English gentleman, doth decry the king's expenses of his privy purse, which in King James's time did not rise to above £5,000 a year, and in King Charles's to £10,000 a year, do now cost us above £100,000. Besides the great charge of the monarchy, as the Duke of York, £100,000 of it, and other limbs of the royal family, and the guards, which for his part, says he, I would have all disbanded, for the king is not the better by them and would be as safe without them, for we have had no rebellions to make him fear anything. But contrarily he is now raising of a land army, which this parliament and kingdom will never bear. Besides, the commanders they put over them are such as will never be able to raise or command them. But the design is, and the Duke of York, he says, is hot for it, to have a land army, and so to make the government like that of France. But our princes have not brains, or at least care and forecast enough to do that. It is strange how he and everybody doth nowadays reflect upon Oliver, and commend him, so brave things he did and made all the neighbour princes fear him, while here a prince come in with all the love and prayers and good liking of his people, and have given greater signs of loyalty and willingness to serve him with their estates than ever was done by any people, hath lost all so soon, that it is a miracle what way a man could devise to lose so much in so little time. Thence he set me down at my Lord Crewe's, and away, and I up to my lord where Sir Thomas Crewe was, and by and by comes Mr. Caesar, who teaches my lady's page upon the lute, and here Mr. Caesar did play some very fine things indeed, to my great liking. Here was my Lord Hinchingbroke also, newly come from Hinchingbroke, where all well. But, methinks, I knowing in what case he stands for money, by his demands to me and the report Mr. Moore gives of the management of the family, makes me, God forgive me, to contemn him, though I do really honour and pity them. Though they deserve it not, that have so good an estate and will live beyond it. To dinner, and very good discourse with my lord, and after dinner Sir Thomas Crewe and I alone, and he tells me how I am mightily in esteem with the Parliament, there being harangues made in the House to the Speaker, of Mr. Pepys's readiness and civility to show them everything, which I am at this time very glad of. He tells me the news of the King and my Lady Castlemaine, which I have wrote already this day, and the design of the Parliament to look into things very well before they give any more money, and I pray God they may. Thence, after dinner, to St. James's, but miss Sir William Coventry, and so home and there find my wife in a dogged humour for my not dining at home, and I did give her a pull by the nose and some ill words, which she provoked me to by something she spoke, that we fell extraordinarily out, insomuch that I, going to the office to avoid further anger, she followed me in a devilish manner thither, and with much ado I got her into the garden out of hearing, to prevent shame. And so home, and by degrees I found it necessary to calm her, and did, and then to the office, where pretty late, and then to walk with her in the garden, and so to supper, and pretty good friends, and so to bed with my mind very quiet. The 13th of July. Up pretty betimes, it being mighty hot weather, and I lying this night, which I have not done, I believe, since a boy, I'm sure not since before I had the stone before, with only a rug and a sheet upon me. To my chamber, and my wife up to do something, and by chance we fell out again. But I to the office, and there we did at the board much business, though the most was the dividing of £5,000, which the Lords Commissioners have with great difficulty found upon a letter to them this week that would have required £50,000, among a great many occasions. After rising, my Lord Anglesey, this being the second time of his being with us, did take me aside, and asked me where I lived, because he would be glad to have some discourse with me. This I liked well enough, and told him I would wait upon him, which I will do, and so all broke up, and I home to dinner where Mr. Pierce dined with us, who tells us what troubles me, that my Lord Buckhurst hath got Nell away from the King's house, lies with her, and gives her £100 a year, so that she hath sent her parts to the house and will act no more. And yesterday Sir Thomas Crewe told me that Lacey lies a-dying of the pox, and yet hath his whore by him, who he will have to look on, he says, though he can do no more, nor would receive any ghostly advice from a bishop, an old acquaintance of his that went to see him. He says there is a strangeness between the King and my Lady Castlemaine, as I was told yesterday. After dinner my wife and I to the New Exchange to pretty maid Mistress Smith's shop, where I left my wife and I to Sir William Coventry's, and there had the opportunity of talk with him, who I perceive doth not like our business of the change of the treasurer's hand, and he tells me he has entered the lists with this new treasurer before the king, in taking away the business of the victualling money from his hand, and the regiment, and declaring that he hath no right to the threepence per cent by his patent, for that it was always heretofore given by particular privy seal, and that the king and council, just upon his coming in, had declared £2,000 a year sufficient. This makes him angry, but Sir William Coventry, I perceive, cares not, but doth every day hold up his head higher and higher. And this day I have received an order from the commissioners of the Treasury to pay no more pensions for Tangier, which I am glad of. And he tells me they do make bold with all things of that kind. Thence I to Whitehall, and in the street I espied Mistress Burrows, and took a means to meet and salute her and talk a little, and then parted, and I home by coach, taking up my wife at the Exchange. And there am mightily pleased with this Mistress Smith, being a very pleasant woman. So home, and resolved upon going to Epsom tomorrow, only for air, and got Mistress Turner to go with us, and so home and to supper, after having been at the office, to bed. It is an odd and sad thing to see that though this be a peace worse than we had before, yet everybody's fear almost is that the Dutch will not stand by their promise, now the king hath consented to all they would have. And yet no wise man that I meet with, when he comes to think of it, but wishes with all his heart a war, but that the king is not a man to be trusted with the management of it. It was pleasantly said by a man in the city, a stranger, to one that told him that peace was concluded, "Well," says he, "and have you a peace?" "Yes," says the other. "Why then," says he, "hold your peace," partly reproaching us with the disgracefulness of it, that it is not fit to be mentioned, and next, that we are not able to make the Dutch keep it when they have a mind to break it. Sir Thomas Crewe, yesterday, speaking of the King of France, how great a man he is, "Why," says he, "all the world thought that when the last Pope died, there would have been such bandying between the crowns of France and Spain, whereas, when he was asked what he would have his ministers at Rome do, 'Why," says he, "let them choose who they will. If the Pope will do what is fit, the Pope and I will be friends. If he will not, I will take a course with him. Therefore I will not trouble myself." And thereupon the election was dispatched in a little time, I think in a day, and all ended. The 14th, 15th, and 16th of July. Lord's Day. Up, and my wife a little before four, and to make us ready, and by and by Mistress Turner came to us by agreement, and she and I stayed talking below while my wife dressed herself, which vexed me that she was so long about it, keeping us till past 5 o'clock before she was ready. She ready, and taking some bottles of wine and beer and some cold fowl with us into the coach, we took coach and four horses which I had provided last night, and so away, a very fine day, and so towards Epsom, talking all the way pleasantly, and particularly of the pride and ignorance of Mistress Lowther in having of her train carried up. The country very fine, only the way very dusty. We got to Epsom by 8 o'clock, to the well, where much company, and there we light, and I drank the water. They did not, but do go about and walk a little among the women, but I did drink 4 pints, and had some very good stools by it. Here I met with divers of our town, among others with several of the tradesmen of our office, but did talk but little with them, it growing hot in the sun. And so we took coach again, and to the town, to the King's Head, where our coachman carried us, and there had an ill room for us to go into, but the best in the house that was not taken up. Here we called for drink and bespoke dinner, and hear that my Lord Buckhurst and Nelly is lodged at the next house, and Sir Charles Sedley with them, and keep a merry house. Poor girl, I pity her, but more the loss of her at the King's house. Here I saw Gilsthrop, Sir William Batten's clerk that hath long been sick. He looks like a dying man with a consumption got, as is believed by the pox. But God knows that but the man is in a sad condition, though he finds himself much better since his coming thither, he says. Will Hewers rode with us, and I left him and the women, and myself walked to church, where few people, contrary to what I expected, and none I knew, but all the Hooblins brothers, and them, after sermon, I did salute and walk with towards my inn, which was in their way to their lodgings. They came last night to see their elder brother who stays here at the Waters, and away tomorrow. James did tell me that I was the only happy man of the navy, of whom, he says, during all this freedom the people have taken of speaking treason, he hath not heard one bad word of me, which is a great joy to me, for I hear the same of others, but do know that I have deserved as well as most. We parted to meet anon, and I to my women into a better room, which the people of the house borrowed for us, and there to dinner, a good dinner, and were merry. And Pendleton came to us, who happened to be in the house, and there talked and were merry. After dinner, he gone, we all lay down after dinner, the day being wonderful hot, to sleep, and each of us took a good nap, and then rose. And Tom Wilson came to see me, and sat and talked an hour, and I perceive he hath been much acquainted with Dr. Fuller, Tom, and Dr. Pearson, and several of the great Cavalier parsons during the late troubles. And I was glad to hear him talk of them, which he did very ingeniously, and very much of Dr. Fuller's art of memory, which he did tell me several instances of. By and by he parted, and we took coach and to take the air, there being a fine breeze abroad, and I went and carried them to the well, and there filled some bottles of water, to carry home with me. And there talked with the two women that farm the well of the Lord of the Manor, Mr. Evelyn, who with his lady, and also my Lord George Barclay's lady, and their fine daughter, that the King of France liked so well, and did dance so rich in jewels before the King at the ball I was at our court last winter, and also their son, a knight of the Bath, were at church this morning. At £12 per annum. Here Will Hewer's horse broke loose, and we had the sport to see him taken again. Then I carried them to see my cousin Pepys's house, and light, and walked round about it, and they like it, as indeed it deserves, very well, and is a pretty place. And then I walked them to the wood hard by, and there got them in the thickets till they had lost themselves. And I could not find the way into any of the walks in the wood, which indeed are very pleasant if I could have found them. At last got out of the wood again, and I, by leaping down the little bank coming out of the wood, did sprain my right foot, which brought me great present pain. But presently, with walking, it went away for the present, and so the women and Will Hewer and I walked upon the downs, where a flock of sheep was, and the most pleasant and innocent sight that ever I saw in my life. We find a shepherd and his little boy reading, far from any houses or sight of people, the Bible to him. So I made the boy read to me, which he did with the fourth tone that children do usually read, that was mighty pretty. And then I did give him something, and went to the father, and talked with him, and I find he had been a servant in my cousin Pepys's house, and told me what was become of their old servants. He did content himself mightily in my liking his boy's reading, and did bless God for him, the most like one of the old patriarchs that ever I saw in my life. And it brought those thoughts of the old age of the world in my mind for 2 or 3 days after. We took notice of his woollen knit stockings of 2 colours mixed, and of his shoes shod with iron shoes, both at the toe and heels, and with great nails in the soles of his feet, which was mighty pretty, and taking notice of them, "Why," says the poor man, "the downs, you see, are full of stones, and we are fain to shoe ourselves thus, and these," says he, "will make the stones fly till they sing before me." I did give the poor man something for which he was mighty thankful, and I tried to cast stones with his horn crook. He values his dog mightily that would turn a sheep anyway which he would have him, when he goes to fold them. Told me there was about 80 sheep in his flock, and that he hath 4 shillings a week the year round for keeping of them. So we parted thence with mighty pleasure in the discourse we had with this poor man, and Mistress Turner, in the common fields here, did gather one of the prettiest nosegays that ever I saw in my life. So to our coach, and through Mr. Minnis's wood, and looked upon Mr. Evelyn's house, and so over the common and through Epsom town to our inn, in the way stopping a poor woman with her milk-pail, and in one of my gilt tumblers did drink our bellyfuls of milk, better than any cream. And so to our inn, and there had a dish of cream, but it was sour, and so had no pleasure in it, and so paid our reckoning and took coach, it being about 7 at night, and passed and saw the people walking with their wives and children to take the air, and we set out for home, the sun by and by going down, and we in the cool of the evening all the way with much pleasure home, talking and pleasing ourselves with the pleasure of this day's work, and Mistress Turner mightily pleased with my resolution, which I tell her is never to keep a country house, but to keep a coach, and with my wife on the Saturday, and to go sometimes for a day to this place, and then quite to another place, and there is more variety, and as little charge and no trouble as there is in a country house. Anon it grew dark, and as it grew dark we had the pleasure to see several glow-worms, which was mighty pretty. But my foot begins more and more to pain me, which Mistress Turner, by keeping her warm hand upon it, did much ease. But so that when we came home, which was just at 11 at night, I was not able to walk from the lane's end to my house without being helped, which did trouble me, and therefore to bed presently. But thanks be to God, found that I had not been missed, nor any business happened in my absence. So to bed, and there had a cerecloth laid to my foot, and lay alone, but in great pain all night long, so as I was not able to go today to wait on the Duke of York with my fellows, but was forced in bed to write the particulars for their discourse there, and kept my bed all day. And anon comes Mistress Turner and new-dressed my foot, and did it so that I was at much ease presently, and so continued all day, so as I slept much and well in the daytime, and in the evening rose and ate something. Where our poor Jane very sad for the death of her poor brother, who hath left a wife and two small children. I did give her 20 shillings in money, and what wine she needed for the burying him. After supper I was willing to go to bed to ease my foot again, which I did, and slept well all night. This evening came to see me Pelling, and we did sing together, and he sings well indeed. And in the morning I was able to put on a wide shoe on that foot, and to the office, without much pain, and there sat all the morning. At noon, home to dinner, where Creed to discourse of our Tangier business, which stands very bad in the business of money, and therefore we expect to have a committee called soon, and to acquaint them, among other things, with the order come to me for the not paying of any more pensions. We dined together, and after dinner I to the office, and there very late, very busy, doing much business indeed. And so, with great comfort, home to supper, and so to bed to ease my foot, which, toward night, begun to ache. The 17th of July. Up and to my chamber to set down my journal of Sunday last with much pleasure, and my foot being pretty well, but yet I am forced to limp. Then, by coach, set my wife down at the New Exchange, and I to Whitehall to the Treasury Chamber, but to little purpose. So to Mr. Burgess, to as little. There to the hall and talked with Mistress Mitchell, who begins to tire me about doing something for her elder son, which I am willing to do, but know not what. Thence to Whitehall again, and thence away, and took up my wife at Unthanks, and left her at the change, and so I to Bennett's to take up a bill for the last silk I had for my vest and coat, which I owe them for, and so to the excise office, and there did a little business, and so to Temple Bar, and stayed at my bookseller's till my wife calls me, and so home, where I am saluted with the news of Hogg's bringing a rich canary prize to Hull, and Sir William Batten doth offer me £1,000 down for my particular share, besides Sir Richard Ford's part, which doth tempt me, but yet I would not take it, but will stand and fall with the company. He and two more, the Panther and Fanfan, did enter into consortship, and so they have all brought in each a prize, though ours worth as much as both theirs, and more. However, it will be well worth having, God be thanked for it. This news makes us all very glad. I, at Sir William Batten's, did hear the particular of it, and there for joy he did give the company that were there a bottle or two of his own last year's wine growing at Walthamstow, than which the whole company said they never drank better foreign wine in their lives. Home and to dinner, and by and by comes Mr. Pierce, who is interested in the panther for some advice, and then comes Creed, and he and I spent the whole afternoon till 8 at night walking and talking of sundry things, public and private, in the garden. But most of all of the unhappy state of this nation at this time by the negligence of the king and his council. The Duke of Buckingham is, it seems, set at liberty, without any further charge against him or other clearing of him, but let to go out, which is one of the strangest instances of the fool's play with which all public things are done in this age that is to be apprehended. And it is said that when he was charged with making himself popular, as indeed he is for many of the discontented Parliament, Sir Robert Howard and Sir Thomas Meres and others, did attend at the council chamber when he was examined, he should answer that whoever was committed to prison by my Lord Chancellor or my Lord Arlington could not want being popular. But it is worth considering the ill state a Minister of State is in under such a prince as ours is. For, undoubtedly, neither of those two great men would have been so fierce against the Duke of Buckingham at the council table the other day, had they not been assured of the King's good liking and supporting them therein. Whereas, perhaps, at the desire of my Lady Castlemaine, who I suppose hath at last overcome the King, the Duke of Buckingham is well received again, and now these men delivered up to the interest he can make for his revenge. He told me over the story of Mistress Stuart, much after the manner which I was told it long since, and have entered it in this book, told me by Mr. Evelyn. Only, he says, it is verily believed that the King did never intend to marry her to any but himself, and that the Duke of York and Lord Chancellor were jealous of it, and that Mistress Stuart might be got with child by the King or somebody else, and the King own a marriage before his contract, for it is but a contract, as he tells me, to this day, with the Queen, and so wiped their noses of the crown, and that therefore the Duke of York and Chancellor did do all they could to forward the match with my Lord Duke of Richmond, that she might be married out of the way. But above all it is a worthy part that this good lady hath acted. Thus we talked till night and then parted, and so I to my office and did business, and so home to supper, and there find my sister Mitchell come from Lee to see us, but doth tattle so much of the late business of the Dutch coming thither that I was weary of it. Yet it is worth remembering what she says, that she hath heard both seamen and soldiers swear they would rather serve the Dutch than the King, for they should be better used. She saw the Royal Charles brought into the river by them, and how they shot off their great guns for joy when they got her out of Chatham River. I would not forget that this very day, when we have nothing to do almost but five merchantmen to man in the river, which have now been about it some weeks, I was asked at Westminster what the matter was that there was such ado kept in pressing of men, as it seems there is thereabouts at this day. So, after supper, we all to bed. My foot very well again, I thank God. The 18th of July. Up and to the office, where busy all the morning, and most of our time taken up with Carcass, upon some complaints brought in against him, and many other petitions about tickets lost, which spends most of our time. Home to dinner, and then to the office again, where very well employed at the office till evening, and then being weary took out my wife and Will Batelier by coach to Islington. But no pleasure in our going, the way being so dusty that one durst not breathe. Drank at the old house, and so home, and then to the office a little, and so home to supper and to bed. The 19th of July. Up and comes the flageolet master and brings me two new great ivory pipes, which cost me 32 shillings. And so to play, and he being done, and Balti's wife taking her leave of me, she going back to Lee today, I to Westminster, and there did receive £15,000 orders out of the Exchequer, in part of a bigger sum upon the 11 months' tax for Tangier, part of which I presently delivered to Sir Hugh Chumley, who was there, and thence with Mr. Gordon to Auditor Woods and Beals, to examine some precedents in his business of the victualling on his behalf, and so home, and in my way by coach down Mark Lane, mightily pleased and smitten to see, as I thought, in passing, the pretty woman, the line-maker's wife, that lived in Fenchurch Street. And I had great mind to have gone back to have seen, but yet would correct my nature and would not. So to dinner with my wife and then to sing, and so to the office where busy all the afternoon late, busy, and to Sir William Batten and Sir Richard Ford's we all, to consider about our great prize at Hull, being troubled at our being likely to be troubled with Prince Rupert, by reason of Hogg's consorting himself with two privateers of the prince's, and so we study how to ease or secure ourselves. So to walk in the garden with my wife, and then to supper and to bed. One tells me that by letter from Holland, the people there are made to believe that our condition in England is such as they may have whatever they will ask, and that so they are mighty high and despise us or are peace with us, and there is too much reason for them to do so. The Dutch fleet are in great squadrons everywhere still about Harwich, and were lately at Portsmouth, and the last letters say at Plymouth, and now gone to Dartmouth to destroy our Straits fleet, lately got in thither. But God knows whether they can do it any hurt or no. But it was pretty. News came the other day so fast of the Dutch fleets being in so many places, that Sir William Batten at table cried, "By God," says he, "I think the devil shits Dutchmen." The 20th of July. Up and to the office where all the morning, and then towards the change at noon in my way, observing my mistake yesterday in Mark Lane, that the woman I saw was not the pretty woman I meant, the linemaker's wife, but a new married woman, very pretty, a strong water seller. And in going by, to my content, I find that the very pretty daughter at the Ship Tavern, at the end of Billiter Lane, is there still, and in the bar, and I believe is married to him that is new come and hath new trimmed the house. Home to dinner, and then to the office, we having dispatched away Mr. Oviatt to Hull, about our prizes there. And I have wrote a letter of thanks by him to my Lord Bellis's, who had writ to me to offer all his service for my interest there, but I dare not trust him. In the evening, late, walking in the garden with my wife, and then to bed. The 21st of July. Lord's Day. Up betimes, and all the morning, in my chamber, and then to dinner with my wife alone, and then all the afternoon in like manner in my chamber, making up my Tangier accounts, and drawing a letter, which I have done at last to my full content, to present to the Lord's Commissioners for Tangier tomorrow. And about 7 at night, when finished my letter and weary, I and my wife and Mercer up by water to Barn Elms, where we walked by moonshine, and called at Lambeth and drank, and had cold meat in the boat, and did eat and sang, and down home by almost 12 at night, very fine and pleasant, only could not sing ordinary songs with that freedom that otherwise I would. Here Mercer tells me that the pretty maid of the Ship Tavern I spoke of yesterday is married there, which I am glad of. So having spent this night with much serious pleasure, to consider that I am in a condition to fling away an angel in such a refreshment to myself and family, we home and to bed, leaving Mercer, by the way, at her own door. The 22nd of July. Up and with Sir William Batten and John Minnis to St. James's, where the first time I have been there since the enemy's being with us, where little business but lack of money, which now is so professed by Sir William Coventry as nothing is more, and the King's whole business owned to be at a stand for want of it. So up to my Lord Chancellor's, where was a committee of Tangier in my Lord's room, where he is to hear causes, where all the judges' pictures hang up very fine. Here I read my letter to them, which was well received, and they did fall seriously to discourse the want of money and other particulars, and to some pretty good purpose. But to see how Sir William Coventry did oppose both my Lord Chancellor and the Duke of York himself, about the order of the Commissioners of the Treasury to me for not paying of pensions, and with so much reason and eloquence, so natural, was admirable. And another thing, about his pressing for the reduction of the charge of Tangier, which they would have put off to another time, but, says he, the King suffers so much by the putting off of the consideration of reductions of charge, that he is undone. And therefore I do pray you, sir, to His Royal Highness, that when anything offers of that kind, you will not let it escape you. Here was a great bundle of letters brought hither, sent up from sea from a vessel of ours that had taken them after they had been flung over by a Dutchman, wherein, among others, the Duke of York did read the superscription of one to De Witt, thus, "To the most wise, foreseeing, and discreet here," etc., which I thought with myself I could have been glad might have been duly directed to any one of them at the table, though the greatest men in this kingdom. The Duke of York, Lord Chancellor, my Lord Duke of Albemarle, Arlington, Ashley, Peterborough, and Coventry, the best of them all for parts. I perceive they do all profess their expectation of a peace, and that suddenly, and do advise of things accordingly, and do all speak of it, and expressly I remember the Duke of Albemarle saying that they hoped for it. Letters were read at the table from Tangier, that Guyland is wholly lost, and that he doth offer a zealer to us to deliver it to us. But Sir William Coventry did declare his opinion that we should have nothing to do with it, and said that if Tangier were offered us now, as the king's condition is, he would advise against the taking it, saying that the king's charge is too great, and must be brought down, it being like the fire of this city, never to be mastered till you have brought it under you. And that these places abroad are but so much charge to the king, and we do rather hitherto strive to greaten them than lessen them. And then the king is forced to part with them, as, says he did with Dunkirk by my Lord Tiviot's making it so chargeable to the king as he did that, and would have done Tangier if he had lived. I perceive he is the only man that doth seek the king's profit, and is bold to deliver what he thinks on every occasion. Having broke up here, I away with Mr. Gordon in his coach to the change, and there a little, and then home and dined, and then to the office, and by with my wife to Whitehall, she to Unthanks, and there met Creed and did a little business at the Treasury Chamber, and then to walk into Westminster Hall an hour or two with much pleasure, reflecting upon our discourse today at the Tangier meeting, and crying up the worth of Sir William Coventry. He tells me of the fray between the Duke of Buckingham at the Duke's Playhouse the last Saturday, and it is the first day I have heard that they have acted at either the King's or Duke's houses this month or 6 weeks. And Henry Killigrew, whom the Duke of Buckingham did soundly beat and take away his sword and make a fool of, till the fellow prayed him to spare his life. And I'm glad of it, for it seems in this business the Duke of Buckingham did carry himself very innocently and well, and I wish he had paid this fellow's coat well. I heard something of this at the change today, and it is pretty to hear how people do speak kindly of the Duke of Buckingham, as one that will inquire into faults, and therefore they do mightily favour him. And it puts me in mind that this afternoon, Billing, the Quaker, meeting me in the hall, came to me, and after a little discourse did say, "Well," says he, "now you will be all called to an account," meaning the Parliament is drawing near. This done, I took coach and took up my wife and so home, and after a little at the office I home to my chamber a while, and then to supper, and to bed. The 23rd of July. Up betimes and to the office doing something towards our great account to the Lords Commissioners of the Treasury, and anon the office sat, and all the morning doing business. At noon, home to dinner, and then close to my business all the afternoon. In the evening, Sir Richard Ford is come back from the Prince, and tells Sir William Batten and me how basely Sir William Penn received our letter we sent him about the prizes at Hull, and slyly answered him about the Prince's leaving all his concerns to him. But the Prince did it afterward by letter brought by Sir Richard Ford to us, which Sir William Penn knows not of. But a very rogue he is. By and by comes sudden news to me, by letter from the clerk of the check at Gravesend, that there was 30 sail of Dutch men of war coming up into the Hope this last tide, which I told Sir William Penn of, but he would not believe it, but laughed and said it was a fleet of Bielanders, and that the guns that were heard was the saluting of the Swedes' ambassador that comes over with them. But within half an hour comes another letter from Captain Proud, that 8 of them were come into the Hope, and 30 more following them, at 10 this morning. By and by comes order from Whitehall to send down one of our number to Chatham, fearing that, as they did before, they may make a show first up hither, but then go to Chatham. So my Lord Brunker doth go, and we here are ordered to give notice to the merchant men of war, gone below the barricado at Woolwich, to come up again. So, with much trouble, to supper, home and to bed. The 24th of July. Betimes this morning comes a letter from the clerk at the check at Gravesend to me, to tell me that the Dutch fleet did come all into the Hope yesterday noon, and held a fight with our ships from thence till 7 at night, that they had burnt 12 fireships, and we took one of theirs and burnt 5 of their fireships. But then, rising and going to Sir William Batten, he tells me that we have burnt one of their men of war, and another of theirs is blown up, but how true this is I know not. But these fellows are mighty bold, and have had the fortune of the wind easterly this time to bring them up, and prevent our troubling them with our fireships, and indeed have had the winds at their command from the beginning, and now do take the beginning of the spring tide as if they had some great design to do. I to my office, and there hard at work all the morning to my great content, abstracting the contract book into my abstract book, which I have by reason of the war omitted for above 2 years, but now am endeavouring to have all my books ready and perfect against the Parliament comes, that upon examination I may be in condition to value myself upon my perfect doing of my own duty. At noon, home to dinner, where my wife mighty musty, but I took no notice of it. But after dinner to the office, and there with Mr. Harper did another good piece of work about my late collection of the accounts of the Navy presented to the Parliament at their last session, which was left unfinished, and now I have done it, which sets my mind at my ease. And so, having tired myself, I took a pair of oars about 5 o'clock, which I made a galley at Redriff. And so, with very much pleasure, down to Gravesend, all the way with extraordinary content, reading of Boyle's Hydrostatics, which the more I read and understand, the more I admire as a most excellent piece of philosophy. As we come nearer Gravesend, we hear the Dutch fleet and ours are fighting, their guns most distinctly and loud. But before we got to Gravesend they ceased, and it grew darkish, and so I landed only, and the flood being come, and went up to the ship and discoursed with the landlord of the house, who undeceives me in what I heard this morning about the Dutch having lost 2 men of war, for it is not so, but several of their fireships. He doth say that this afternoon they did force our ships to retreat, but that now they are gone down as far as Shield Haven, but what the event hath been of this evening's guns they know not, but supposes not much, for they have all this while shot at good distance one from another. They seem confident of the security of this town, and the river above it, if the enemy should come up so high, their fortifications being so good, and guns many. But he doth say that people do complain of Sir Edward Spragg that he hath not done extraordinary, and more of Sir William Jennings, that he came up with his tamkins in his guns. Having discoursed thus a little with him, and ate a bit of cold venison, and drank, I away, took boat, and homeward again with great pleasure, the moon shining, and it being a fine, pleasant, cool evening, and got home by 12:30 at night, and so to bed. The 25th of July. Up and to the office, where we sat all the morning, at noon, home to dinner, and there sang with much pleasure with my wife, and so to the office again, and busy all the afternoon. At night, Sir William Batten, William Penn, and myself, and Sir Richard Ford, did meet in the garden to discourse about our prizes at Hull. It appears that Hogg is the veriest rogue, the most observable embezzler that ever was known. This vexes us, and made us very free and plain with Sir William Penn, who hath been his great patron, and as very a rogue as he, but he doth now seem to own that his opinion is changed of him, and that he will join with us in our strictest inquiries, and did sign to the letters we had drawn, which he had refused before, and so seemingly parted good friends. And then I demanded of Sir Richard Ford and the rest what passed today at the meeting of the Parliament, who told me that contrary to all expectation by the King, that there would be but a thin meeting, there met above 300 this first day, and all the discontented party, and indeed the whole House seems to be no other almost. The speaker told them, as soon as they were sat, that he was ordered by the king to let them know he was hindered by some important business to come to them and speak to them as he intended, and therefore ordered him to move that they would adjourn themselves till Monday next, it being very plain to all the house that he expects to hear by that time of the sealing of the peace, which by letters, it seems from my Lord Hollis, was to be sealed the last Sunday. But before they would come to the question whether they would adjourn, Sir Thomas Tomkins steps up and tells them that all the country is grieved at this new raised standing army, and that they thought themselves safe enough in their train bands, and that therefore he desired the king might be moved to disband them. Then rises Garraway and seconds him, only with this explanation which he said he believed the other meant, that as soon as peace should be concluded, they might be disbanded. Then rose Sir William Coventry and told them that he did approve of what the last gentleman said, but also that at the same time he did no more than what, he durst be bold to say, he knew to be the king's mind, that as soon as peace was concluded, he would do of himself. Then rose Sir Thomas Littleton, and did give several reasons from the uncertainty of their meeting again, but to adjourn, in case news comes of the peace being ended before Monday next, and the possibility of the king's having some about him that may endeavour to alter his own, and the good part of his counsels, advice for the keeping up of the land army, and therefore it was fit that they did present it to the king as their desire, that as soon as peace was concluded, the land army might be laid down, and that this, their request, might be carried to the king by them of their house that were privy councillors, which was put to the vote, and carried nemine contradicente. So after this vote passed, they adjourned, but it is plain what the effects of this Parliament will be if they be suffered to sit, that they will fall foul upon the faults of the government, and I pray God they may be permitted to do it, for nothing else, I fear, will save the king and kingdom than the doing it betimes. They gone, I to walk with my wife in the garden, and then home to supper and to bed. The 26th of July. Up and betimes to the office where Mr. Hayter and I together all the morning about the perfecting of my abstract book of contracts and other things, to my great content. At noon home to dinner, and then to the office again all the afternoon, doing of other good things there, and being tired, I then abroad with my wife and left her at the New Exchange, while I by water thence to Westminster to the hall. But shops were shut up, and so to Whitehall by water, and thence took up my wife at Unthanks, and so home, mightily tired with the dust in riding in a coach, it being mighty troublesome. So home, and to my office, and there busy very late, and then to walk a little with my wife, and then to supper and to bed. No news at all this day what we have done to the enemy, but that the enemy has fallen down, and we after them, but to little purpose. The 27th of July. Up and to the office, where I hear that Sir John Coventry has come over from Breda, a nephew, I think, of Sir William Coventry's, but what message he brings I know not. This morning news is come that Sir Joseph Jordan is come from Harwich with 16 fireships and 14 other little ships of war, and did attempt to do some execution upon the enemy, but did it without discretion, as most do say, so as that they have been able to do no good, but have lost 4 of their fireships. They attempted, it seems, when the wind was too strong, that our grapplings would not hold. Others say we came to leeward of them, but all condemn it as a foolish management. They are come to Sir Edward Spragg about Lee, and the Dutch are below at the Nore. At the office all the morning and at noon to the change, where I met Fenn, and he tells me that Sir John Coventry doth bring the confirmation of the peace, but I do not find the change at all glad of it, but rather the worse, they looking upon it as a peace made only to preserve the king for a time in his lusts and ease, and to sacrifice trade and his kingdoms only to his own pleasures, so that the hearts of merchants are quite down. He tells me that the king and my Lady Castlemaine are quite broke off, and she is gone away, and is with child, and swears the king shall own it, and she will have it christened in the chapel at Whitehall as, and owned for, the king's, as other kings have done, or she will bring it into Whitehall Gallery and dash the brains of it out before the king's face. He tells me that the king and court were never in the world so bad as they are now, for gaming, swearing, whoring and drinking, and the most abominable vices that ever were in the world, so that all must come to naught. He told me that Sir George Carteret was at this end of the town, so I went to visit him in Broad Street, and there he and I together, and he is mightily pleased with my Lady Jem's having a son, and a mighty glad man he is. He tells me, as to news, that the peace is now confirmed and all that over. He says it was a very unhappy motion in the House the other day about the land army, for whether the king hath a mind of his own to do the thing desired or no, his doing it will be looked upon as a thing done only in fear of the Parliament. He says that the Duke of York is suspected to be the great man that is for raising of this army and bringing things to be commanded by an army, but he believes that he is wronged, and says that he doth know that he is wronged therein. He doth say that the court is in a way to ruin all for their pleasures, and says that he himself hath once taken the liberty to tell the king the necessity of having at least a show of religion in the government, and sobriety, and that it was that that did set up and keep up Oliver, though he was the greatest rogue in the world, and that it is so fixed in the nature of the common Englishman that it will not out of him. He tells me that while all should be labouring to settle the kingdom, they are at court all in factions, some for and others against my Lord Chancellor, and another for and against another man, and the king adheres to no man, but this day delivers himself up to this, and the next to that, to the ruin of himself and business. That he is at the command of any woman like a slave, though he be the best man to the queen in the world, with so much respect, and never lies a night from her, but yet cannot command himself in the presence of a woman he likes. Having had this discourse, I parted and home to dinner, and thence to the office all the afternoon to my great content, very busy. It raining this day all day, to our great joy, it having not rained, I think, this month before, so as the ground was everywhere as burnt and dry as could be, and no travelling in the road or streets in London for dust. At night, late home to supper and to bed. The 28th of July, Lord's Day. Up and to my chamber, where all the morning close, to draw up a letter to Sir William Coventry upon this tidings of peace, taking occasion, before I am forced to it, to resign up to His Royal Highness my place of the victualling, and to recommend myself to him by promise of doing my utmost to improve this peace in the best manner we may, to save the kingdom from ruin. By noon I had done this to my good content, and then with my wife all alone to dinner, and so to my chamber all the afternoon to write my letter fair, and sent it away, and then to talk with my wife and read, and so by daylight, the only time I think I've done it this year, to supper, and then to my chamber to read, and so to bed. My mind very much eased after what I have done today.